It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. It's been nearly 15 years since the United States Supreme Court handed down a ruling that resulted in significant changes in how American political campaigns are financed. The case was Citizens United against the Federal Election Commission. Here's an analysis from the Associated Press the day the ruling was handed down.
It was a 5-4 decision. The court repealed a 1990 ruling of its own that had banned corporations from using their money, corporations and unions from using their money, to expressly call for the defeat or election of a candidate. Basically what the court said is that corporations have First Amendment rights, at least the majority in this case. Having said that, it said that that First Amendment right trumps any danger that corporate money or union money has a corrupting influence in politics.
Fast forward to the present, and in our last few elections, corporations have given millions, if not billions, of dollars to politicians, political parties, and groups at all levels. We're going to talk about that for the rest of the program today with author Chara Torres-Spellacy. She argues the corporations taking an active role in politics in this political environment are playing with fire. Torres-Spellacy is a professor of law at Stetson University in Florida. She's also fellow at the Brennan Center for Justice at the NYU School of Law, and she's a member of the board of directors of Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. Her new book is called Corporatocracy: How to Protect Democracy from Dark Money and Corrupt Politicians. It's out next month from New York University Press. Chara Torres-Spellacy, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, in order to make this interview happen, we taped our conversation earlier this morning, so we're not taking calls live today. But last week, we gave members of our texting group the opportunity to share their thoughts about this. We'll be hearing some of those comments throughout our conversation. If you want to join that, you can text the word TALK to 217-803-0730. All right, I want to start with a Midwestern example of this. Longtime listeners of the show might remember we've talked about this before, but what do cardboard boxes have to do with our modern democracy?
So this goes to a man named Richard Uihlein and his wife. They own a company that has the same sounding name, even though they're spelled differently. But if you ever look at some of your boxes that you get from Amazon and other retailers, often somewhere on the box, it'll say Uihlein on it. And that means that this billionaire is getting a little bit of profit every time you use one of his boxes.
And what is he doing with that profit is the question.
Yeah. So he's sort of notorious for backing right-wing politicians and right-wing causes, including anti-gay causes. And I think what's sort of peculiar about him is that he's largely flown under the radar, even though he's one of the largest political spenders in the United States.
So I want to go right to one of the text messages we got. David in Mount Morris said, Citizens United turned the politician advocating for the people to advocating for the corporate elite. To say that a corporation is a person is ridiculous. It has too much influence and should be overturned. Chara, corporate influence in politics is nothing new, but what makes the past 15 years different?
So corporate personhood is something that has been in the law since before America was America. It's a really old concept. However, it has changed over time with the Supreme Court's jurisprudence. So there was a time when the court really thought of human beings and corporations as having a different universe of political rights. And I think the big change that Citizens United brings is it allows corporations to spend in candidate elections. They had already been invited in to spend on ballot measures back in the 1970s in a case called Bellotti, which actually arose out of Massachusetts. And so they've had that ability for a really long time. But what's new with Citizens United is they can spend in candidate races, especially federal candidate races. And so what Citizens United says is corporations have a First Amendment right to spend as much money as they want to on political ads in any American election, whether it's federal, state, or local.
Another text message, Stephen in Urbana wrote, the economic divide in America has been largely exacerbated by Citizens United. As a result of that decision, we have a two-tiered political system in which those in the bottom half of the economic ladder are grossly underrepresented at all levels. Consequently, a fascist leader has arisen as an attractive false answer to this painful plight created by Citizens United. Stephen says, thank you for that. You know, Char, it's been almost a decade now since Donald Trump entered the Republican presidential race and really has changed significantly the Republican Party in his time. As they say, correlation is not causation. But do you see a link between Citizens United and our corporate state of affairs and the evolution of the Republican Party in the past decade?
That's a really hard one to disentangle, and I would leave that to the political scientists. I am an expert on campaign finance. So, but what I will say is post-Citizens United, there was a little noticed decision called Speech Now. Speech Now was a DC circuit case a few months later. And what that decision does is it created super PACs. So a super PAC is an entity that at the federal level can take in money from any source in any amount, and then they spend that money independently of candidates and political parties. So it's with super PACs that you see huge donations from corporations to a single super PAC in a single day. So the biggest ones that have come in the 2024 election have come in at the $25 million level to, you know, a single super PAC in a single day. And it is just very difficult for any human being to match that. I mean, we do have billionaires in this country who can keep up with that type of corporate giving, but the average American citizen can't.
Now, one of them happens to be our governor here in Illinois, J.B. Pritzker. But we will talk more about this. We need to take a break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Today, we're talking about corporate spending in elections and the effect that has on our politics in our democracy. John in Harvard in our texting group said, it has opened the barn door and allowed the most vile, disease-ridden pigs to wander into the yard to infect our politics with their mud. We also heard from Ryan in Champaign, who said, completely destroyed the country. We're talking about this with Chara Torres-Spellacy, a professor of law at Stetson University in Florida, among other roles. She's written a book called Corporatocracy, How to Protect Democracy from Dark Money and Corrupt Politicians. All right, so before the break, we were talking about some of the background of the Citizens United decision and the changes in the sort of unlimited spending it allowed and the sort of reaffirmation of corporate personhood in the political campaign context. I do want to get into some of the examples of what we've seen since then that you write about in the book. One of them is a scheme in to subvert the democratic process driven in part by corporate funding. Take us through the story of ghost candidates in Florida.
Sure. So this is a scandal that came to a head in 2020 in Florida. And I think it got sort of lost in the shuffle because of all of the other nonsense around the 2020 election. But what happened in Florida is Democratic voters received really deceptive mailers that tried to split the Democratic vote. This was a plot by the GOP in Florida to purposely split the Democratic vote so that Republicans could be elected. And in the three state Senate races where a ghost candidate was run, the Republican was elected. And so they got the result that they wanted. Now, with dark money, you can't figure out who is spending in politics unless one of two things happens. Either you have litigation or a leak. And in the ghost candidate scandal, you have a leak. we have an insider who has been giving documents to the press. And what those documents show is that the source of funding for the ghost candidate scheme came from a company called Florida Power and Light, which is a huge utility here in Florida. And one of the reasons I care about that entity is not only is it a large entity in and of itself, it's also a subsidiary of an even bigger entity called NextEra Energy, which is a publicly traded company. And one of the things that I tell my students when I'm teaching them about this is NextEra Energy, of course, their market cap floats with the their share price, but I've never seen it lower than $100 billion. And that's what I think the real danger with Citizens United is, that normal human beings in America have to share their democracy with such huge and rich entities.
And I guess that gets at the point is where some people will say, well, look, we've had the rise of small dollar donors. I'm sure many people listening to this have been plagued with the text messages asking them to chip in 10 bucks or whatever you can to help so-and-so candidate. Why is that not a counterweight in your example to this idea that, well, look, there are a lot of people-powered campaigns right now. The major candidates, at least, certainly have more money than they can practically use to run because of small-dollar donations. Why is that not a good enough counterweight in your view?
Well, I think it's just a question of proportion. So, for example, one of the things we're contending with in the 2024 election is the richest man in the world, who is Elon Musk. He has decided to wade into politics. And by his own admissions, he has spent at least $70 million, and that's just in the course of a couple of months. So it is true that small donors have really come out in the 2024 election, which is a good thing. I think it's good to democratize how we fund elections and to have, I think that enables more types of candidates to even run in the first place. Because before we have our normal primaries, we have what is known as the money primary. And if you can't raise enough money, then you're not taken seriously as a candidate, which I think is a real shame. It's one of the reasons why I advocate for public funding of elections, because so long as elections are privately funded, we trap our candidates in this horrible fundraising arms race where each side thinks that they have to outraise the other or else they won't win election. And people waste, I think, an enormous amount of time and energy just raising money.
You know, I too remember being very intrigued by the idea of public financing. And I, to this day, I still check that little box on my tax returns that says, yes, direct $3 or whatever it is of my taxes to the campaign presidential fund. But I don't think the candidates really have used those in quite a long time. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. Is there a path that you see realistically getting to public financing, or what would it take to actually have that change? Because it strikes me that right now you'd need maybe an entirely different Supreme Court at a minimum to allow something like that to go through.
So I think those are two different questions. One is what political will would we need? So I think a lot will depend on the outcome of the 2024 election. If there happens to be a Democratic trifecta with a Democrat in the White House, Democratic control of the Senate, and Democratic control of the House, then there are pro-democracy pieces of legislation that have already been introduced that would be reintroduced. And might actually have the chance at passage this time. Essentially, the last time around, it was all down to Joe Manchin, but Joe Manchin is leaving the scene, so hopefully he can't play that same spoiler role going forward. Though you do raise a good point with the Supreme Court. So one of the things that I've looked at in my scholarship is what the Supreme Court has done with campaign finance regulations that show up at their front door. And essentially what they've done ever since 2006 is every single campaign finance law that has been challenged has been struck down by the Roberts Supreme Court with a narrow exception of one. They upheld one case out of Florida, which was actually about judicial races, but every other thing they have killed. And that is the fear that animates a lot of the discussions around campaign finance. Like, why even bother? But I think it is worth the bother, because you if you want to reverse something like Citizens United, then you have to convince a future Supreme Court to overrule it. Otherwise, the only way to get rid of this decision, if you can't convince the Supreme Court, is to amend the Constitution. And you'd have to be amending the First Amendment, which many people think of as sacrosanct. And so it's a particularly heavy lift to get rid of Citizens United, but I think it's worth the effort to try.
And what about the incentives? It seems to me that at this point, both political parties are now benefiting from, you know, this post-Citizens United regime. Correct me if you see it differently on that. So where would you even find the political will among elected office holders to necessarily make that change?
So most corporate political spending supports Republican candidates and conservative causes.
Though there's union spending is a factor here as well, right? Or is it?
There is union spending. It tends to get dwarfed by corporate spending.
Okay.
And the very little corporate money that goes to Democrats has been very idiosyncratic. So when Sam Bankman-Fried's company FTX was around, so that was a cryptocurrency exchange that he ran into the ground and now he's in prison.
Yes, also or a Ponzi scheme, depending on how you, yeah. Potato, potato, yes.
Yeah. So he was sort of remarkable because in the midterm, in our last election, he gave around $38 million and he gave it all to Democrats. But that was only his on-the-record spending. On closer inspection, he was giving even more money to Republicans, but he was giving it dark. But he was sort of unique in that he gave to Democrats at all. Mostly corporate money just goes to Republicans. The other example that stood out to me in this book is Juul. So the vaping company, they also gave a lot to Democrats when Democrats had control of the House. So that's 2018 and 2020. But they, of course, then the Republicans get into control and their spending shifts. So I think that's more opportunistic and not because they really, you know, liked Democratic causes or policies.
Yeah, no, that's certainly something we've seen in Illinois. And there was an old political person around here who used to say, hey, when we're out, we're out. When we're in, we're in. When we're out, we're still in. And campaign spending has a lot to do with that. So, okay, one of the ways you write about how to deal with the problems at play here comes in the form of what you call the democracy litmus test. Run us through the different parts of that.
Sure. So I am trying to encourage my fellow voters to think about this sort of basic question. Does this course of action help democracy or not? And I think people should do that at the ballot box. So one big example is, it is really perilous to vote for an election denier. You're basically empowering someone who doesn't believe in the democratic process. And it's also really perilous to vote for someone who has a history of corruption. So if you encounter a candidate like that, you might think about whether they deserve your vote. And because I'm a campaign finance nerd, I also want people to dig a little deeper and try to figure out the corporate backers of some of these really problematic candidates. And there you can use the power of your pocketbook and the power of your investments. And if you see that a particular set of companies is doing some really problematic things in politics, then you can think about, like, do they deserve your hard-earned dollars?
Such as, say, where you get your cardboard boxes, I guess, maybe would be one of those things. If not that I'm advocating for anybody to do any particular thing, but I'll leave that just hanging there. we're almost out of time, but as we talk about our democracy potentially being on the line in this election, what makes the stakes for these corporations compared to those of us human beings different as we're contemplating 2024?
Well, I think some of these interests of human beings and corporations actually are aligned. So I don't think that a corporation will be benefited in most cases by political chaos. When I saw the attack on the Capitol and on January 6th, that's what inspired me to write this book. And I would think that the chaos that was unleashed that day is really not, you know, not good for the stock market, not good for the average company. And after January 6th, there was this short period where lots of different corporations, hundreds of them, said that they would not support the Sedition Caucus. Those are the Republicans who would not vote to certify Biden's win in 2020. But if you fast forward 4 years, almost none of those corporations kept that promise. And my good friends over at Crew have traced around $150 million that have flowed from corporate PACs to the Sedition Caucus. So I hope that this behavior is changed and that you can read my book to learn more about it.
That book is called Corporatocracy: How to Protect Democracy from Dark Money and Corrupt Politicians. We've been speaking with the author, Chara Torres-Spellacy, who's also a professor of law at Stetson University, a fellow at the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU, and a member of the board of directors of CREW, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. Again, the book, Corporatocracy. Chara, thanks so much for sharing it with us today on the 21st Show.
Thanks for having me.
And that is all the time we have for our show today. Coming up tomorrow on the 21st Show, we're just a couple of weeks from Election Day, but early voting has already been underway for quite a while now here in Illinois. We are going to revisit our conversation with local election officials about what they're doing to safeguard the integrity of the vote this year and to keep poll workers and voters safe in an era of rising political violence. That's coming up tomorrow on the 21st Show, which is produced by Anna Casey, Christine Hatfield, and Jose Zepeda. Our digital producer is Coulson Khan. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. You can now find our program on YouTube. Just search for Illinois Public Media. Plus, we're on all the other podcast platforms, Apple, Spotify. Just search for The 21st Show. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.